سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, because of the reverence and the respect that he had for life, he did not want to disrespect life by living it under a tyrant. When you look at Imam Hussein, when he says "Hayhat minna dhilla," he's speaking about life. That this life that Allah has given me, and it's such a great blessing, I have so much respect for it, I do not want to disrespect it by living that life and by making myself live that life under a tyrant, under a zalim. Hence, this is shows that there is a special honor that Imam Hussein afforded to life itself. When we see "Hayhat minna dhilla," the saying of Imam Hussein, the slogan of Imam Hussein, we see that slogan, and when we look at its meaning, we see that what it really means is that I don't want a life that has the quality of humiliation in it. In other words, life should be respected. The concept of life itself, the meaning of life itself. And when we look at life, when we see what life is to us, then we look at what Allah says in the Quran as to what is the first thing Allah gave to a mu'min, a believer. Think about it. What is the first thing Allah gave to a mu'min, a believer? The first thing that He gives to a mu'min as a reward for his iman, as a recompensation for his faith. What does Allah give to a believer? Is it Jannat? Jannat will come way later. Right? Salam? Right? That will come later. A good death? A death of happiness, is that will come when we die. Even before that, when you look at it, Allah Himself says, "Lanuhyiyanna hayatan tayyiba." The first thing we give you is a good life. Is a life that is good. This is the first thing we give you. A reward for a mu'min, a reward for a believer, is a good life. Life itself, just the fact that Allah gave it to us, itself should be something that is wonderful, something that is exciting, something that is such to us that we are thankful to Him for giving it to us. This is what life itself is. Hardships are a part of life. They're part of life. We are looking at the whole picture. In spite of the hardships in life, in spite of the trials in life, in spite of all the testing in life, life itself looking at it in the most fundamental way itself is what we should be happy about. That there is life. Last week, I mentioned that we should define life and we should have a definition of life that is such that, you know, we are thankful to the one who gave it to us. We are thankful to Allah that Allah, you gave this life to us. Because life itself, in reality, should be beautiful. The fact is that most people haven't recognized it. And the proof of that is that everyone is trying to make it better. You see? Why is everyone trying to make life better? Isn't the life that Allah gave you good enough that you are thankful for it? And you're saying that, you know what, I need to make my life better. You see, it means we haven't understood what life is yet. That's why we are trying to make it better. Can you make something better than what Allah has given you? The life that He has given you, that itself should be something that we should be excited about. Something that we should just look at and say, Subhanallah, thank you, this is great. The fact is that we haven't understood life. We haven't understood what life is. And that's why we see such a wrong concepts exist in our life. The way we train our children, you'll see, is a very bad way of training them. The very horrible way of training them. You see, we look at, for example, when we want to tell them that, you know, you need to make your life better. If you don't educate yourself, you'll be flipping burgers and you'll have a miserable life. Right? Isn't that what you hear? Meaning that life is not good right now, but you can make it better. What Allah gave is not good, but we can help Him out by making it better. Right? Understand, this is a horrible way of looking at life. Such a way of looking at life leads to frustration, leads us to depression. Because when you don't understand what life is and the beauty of life and the joy of life, now you make plans and you think that you can do things to make things better, or that you make goals in your life that have nothing to do with life. And now when you make those goals, thinking that life is going to become better when you achieve them, what happens? Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. What happens is that when you make these goals for your children and for ourselves, we have these sort of goals that we make, that if we get this, we'll be happy. If we get this, we'll be happy. If we achieve this, we'll be happy. When those type of goals are made, then a person is running after those goals instead of enjoying the life that he has. And when he runs after those goals, and let's say he achieves them. Not everyone achieves the goals that they started with. So there are two possibilities. If he doesn't achieve them, he's depressed that he didn't achieve the goals that he started off with. And if he does achieve them, then he's depressed. Why isn't he happy with the goals that he achieved? In both ways, he will be depressed. In other words, he was thinking that there is a part of gold at the end of the rainbow. When he reaches there, it's not there. He reaches the goal, but it's not there. So in either way, when you make these goals in your life, the only thing you find at the end is frustration and depression. Why? Because we haven't understood life. We thought that these things are what make life better. Because we have been told that. Listen, if you have, you know, more money, if you have a bigger house, if you have a bigger car, if you have all these things, this is what makes life better. It doesn't happen. My friends, even let's say, for example, it's not, for example, really materialistic things, more, let's say, natural things. If I have more children, if I have a bigger family, it will make my life better. Then when you have it, then you see, man, this is frustrating. Right? You see that it's too much. Why is it? Because it wasn't these things that made life better. It's not these things that made life better. The idea that Allah gave you the best life. We haven't understood that, what life is yet. And this is what we want to understand. This is what we want to know, what this life is. And to have the correct understanding so that while we look at all these other things that we have in life, and these are things that are beside life, but just to attain happiness with life itself, the life that Allah gave you, the blessing that He gave you as a life itself should be a matter of joy for us. If it's not, then it means we haven't understood this blessing. And that's what we want to go through. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So, in regards to this one hadith, I will mention and we'll go on from that hadith. This hadith from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. In extension to his slogan, Hayhat Minna Zilla, we see that he explained this and said, Inni la aral mauta illa sa'ada. He says, I do not view death except that it is a source of happiness. وَالْحَيَاةُ مَعَ الظَّالِمِينَ إِلَّا بَرَمَا. And I do not view life with a tyrant, meaning this life living with a tyrant, living under the umbrella of dhulm in humiliation, as nothing more than a disgrace. Something that is a disgrace for me. Nothing for me. So when we look at this hadith, we understand there's a life that he's respecting. And he understands that he's correlating it with death. So now, when we look at both life and death, then we understand the first concept of life we get is when we look at death itself. At death itself, this mouth that's there, when we look at that, then we start understanding what life is. So now, let me now just start up about life, the concept of life, what it is. My friends, life itself is divided into two phases. Allah has made life that way. He said, listen, there are two phases to life. One is a very small phase. One is a very enormous phase. One is tiny, one is vast. Two phases of life we have. One life that we have is what we are experiencing right now. This is life. And one life we have is what we will experience after we die. That is also life. Many people have this concept of akhirat, of hereafter, that is like when they say that akhirat is what? Akhirat is like, for example, a place that you get rewarded or punished. You see, this is the concept or misconception that people have. Akhirat is a place of reward or punishment. If you are good here, you will sit there somewhere for eternity and getting fed. Right? I mean, that's what everyone thinks that life of Akhirat is. Akhirat is what? It's a place where we get rewarded. So you're in a throne, you're sitting on a throne, here comes the drink, here's what I want, ordering this, ordering that, and there are waitresses and waiters, you know, helping us out, you know. Whatever you want, we can get, and hence it's a place of reward. Or it's a place of punishment. If you're bad, then obviously, you know, like for example, we will be punished over there. You know, so we'll be all in one place. We won't move around. Just in one place. We're stuck there and someone is burning us or pinching us or hurting us. To us, the concept of akhirat is that it's not life. Life is here. This is where you, for example, have fun and do all these things. And when we get there, we just get rewarded for being good. You see, this is the misconception people have. No, akhirat is not that. Akhirat is life. You will be living a life there, just like you are living here. There's a life there that you will be living. There will be friends there that you will have. There'll be issues there. that you will be face to face with. Nothing that will hurt you, always help you. Right? There's a life that you're living there. You're leading a life there. It's not a place where you're just sitting in one place and you can't do anything and this is it. I mean, if that was the case, you know, that would be hell. Right? That would be hell, really. I mean, what kind of life is that where you're just in one place, stuck in one place and just getting rewarded? Yeah, I remember as an example, right? You know, I once saw this episode of Twilight Zone. If you remember that old show, Twilight Zone, this was an old episode, sci-fi episode, this and that, right? So one time, you know, this thief, right? You know, at the beginning, he's running away, he's shot, and he dies. And he wakes up, and this angel comes to him and says, I'm going to show you your place. Obviously, he thinks he's going to the hell, right? Because he's always been bad, he's a thief, and he's always been doing wrong. So he, for example, ends up in this room where the angel says, listen, you live in here in this room, you can have anything you want. Whatever you want. He said, what? Man, are you sure I'm in the right place? I didn't do that much good in my life. I was always a criminal. He says, no, this is your place. So he stays there. And he just wants, whatever he wants, he gets. You know, he says, I want this. Here you are. I want this. Here you are. I want this. After a while, he gets tired of this. He says, listen, man, I'm sick and tired of this place. The angel comes around. He says, I'm sick and tired. Why are you sick and tired of this place? It's because it's not fun. It's not exciting. There, I had to actually do something to get this. That was the excitement in life. Here, I just get whatever I want. You know, I thought heaven would be a better place. So the angel says, who says you're in heaven, you know? So a concept of akhirat like that really is hell. And Allah didn't make heaven like that. You know, where we are just in one place, stuck in one place, not being able to do anything. You see, that's why Allah says that in the dar al akhirah la hayal hayawan. He said that the akhirat, that is real life. What you're living here is you're stuck here. You're stuck here. You see, the life here, right? Here, there's a shortage of limit. There's restriction on limitations. There's restriction on freedom here. You can't do whatever you want here. You're restricted, right? I can't eat a whole cow. Right? I eat one steak, I'm full. I can't eat a whole cow because I'm limited here. You see, you're limited here, you're restricted here with the amount you can do. But you're not restricted here in the choices you can make. In akhirat, you're restricted with your movement up and down. But you're not restricted with your limitations of how and how much you can do. You see, this is the difference. There, when you go there, it's different. There is a life you're living there. And that's what we need to understand. That, listen, when we die, there is a life we have to live. And that is what's important for us to understand. We think that this is life, and when we die, then we just get rewarded for whatever good we did, and we're in one place, and we get fed, and that's it. That's not the case, my friends. The first thing to understand, that life has two phases. One, it's here, which is a short phase. Two, that's there, that is a long phase. And that is life also, where you're going to be living a life. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now when you look at these two phases of life, really, when you look at these two phases of life, you see one is short and one is long. And really, I'm saying short and long, but really it cannot be compared. I mean, one is nothing and the other is eternity. Right? There you're going to live forever. Now forever is no way in comparison to what we have here. So I'm just saying long and short, but it's much more than that. The separation between them is much more. The gap between them is much more. It's eternal there. Now, my friends, let me just tell you, if this is the concept of life, If life, this is life. We start here and there's no ending. So now, if that is the concept of life, how much are we thinking about our life? How much do you think about your life? Let me ask you directly something that will make sense to you. Just look at yourself today. How many times have you thought about your life? Just today. How many dreams do you have about your life? How many hopes do you have about your life? Understand this, my friend. It's very important how much we are bogged down. How much we are bogged down by the misconception of life that we think this is life and that's it. How many times have you said about akhirat as opposed to here? Now, opposed, like for example, here, how many times have you hoped about the life here? I hope I get this. I wish I had this. Right? I wish I had this, for example, house. How many times do you wish about the life here? Tell me. All the time? I wish I had this. I wish I want this. I wish I had this. I dream about this. This is my dream car. This is my dream house. This is my dream neighborhood. This is my dream wife. Right? So, how many wishes do you have of this world? How many dreams do you have of this world? How many times have you wished like that in your life about akhirat? Really, how many times have you wished like that? Right? In my akhirat, you know what? Allah, you know, I wish I had this there. I want this there. You know, this is what I'm striving for. This is my dream, you know, to reach there. How many times have you dreamt about akhirat? We wished for it, truly, with our hearts. That I want this here. I want that thing there. Specifically, not just, inshallah, give me Jannah. And, you know, you can feed me there. You know, I don't have to work anymore. No, I mean specific things, you know. Allah, you know, I want this over there. You know, please give me this there. I want this here. I wish I could get this there. This is my dream. How many times have we done that? Really, this shows itself what is our concept of life. This itself shows how much do we believe in akhirat? How much do we believe that that's a life? You see, this is where we lost our concept of life. As I said, my friend, most problems in this life is because of the fact that we don't understand that life. Why is a person depressed here? Is because he doesn't understand what life is. He doesn't understand what life is. That's why he's depressed here. Why do you think someone is bogged down here and feels like his limit restricted? It's because he doesn't understand life. That's the reason why. My friends, when we look at life and we understand life, that is where we truly begin to think that, yes, this is life. You know, it's like, for example, when we don't pay attention to our real life and just concentrate here, it's like, for example, a child just saying that, you know what, I'm not going to grow up, this is all it is, so let me just have all the fun right here. Let me have all the fun right here, let me give you everything here. And he's not thinking of his other life. And you know that childhood compared to adulthood, you will laugh if someone sacrifices their adulthood for their childhood. We laugh at that person. I mean, look what you're doing to your child. He has a long life to live. You're spoiling him. You're making him a brat and he won't be good. He's good for nothing. Why is he good for nothing? He's having fun here. His dreams are being met here, but his dreams here are destroying his dreams there. His goals here and him striving for his goals here is destroying his goals there as an adult. That is his real life. And everyone knows that the child, that's not your real life. You know, that's like this artificial, made up, fun life that everyone goes through. They're sheltered and they don't have to worry about anything. But when you go there, that is real life as an adult. So that's the same thing, my friends. Understand, the concept of life is that it's divided into two types. And those two types, One is short, one is long. That long life, when we really analyze it, at it being a life, then we know that it's all one thing. Let me explain that a little bit more if you send a salawat. What do you want from life? Right? What do you want from life? I'm saying this, my friends, so that you can use your imagination. Many times what happens is this. The first factor of happiness and joy, before we get the drive and motivation and desire to live our life, which is always also helpful, meaning if you have goals and we have a drive and motivation, it is helpful. But even before that, the source of joy and happiness is not the goals that we have in life, but the value we attach to life. How much value do you give to this life that you have? Some people you see give a lot of value to life. Some people you see, they don't give value, they just live it as if they want to get over it. They just live it without, as if this is nothing. I just want to live it out, finish it up. You know, one day I'll die, that's it. Everyone dies. Well, what are you doing now? Yeah, whatever, you know. It's going to end soon. How much value do we give to life? Some people live life with a very high value. They attach a lot of value to life. And those are the people you will see who attain happiness. That when they grow up, that when they live their lives, you see they take the pleasure out of every moment of life. Whether that issue they face is an issue that brings about happiness or an issue that brings about a tragedy and sadness. It doesn't matter. Just the fact that they attach value to life, everything in life becomes pleasurable, whether it's pleasure or pain. Everything becomes pleasurable. Everything becomes a source of joy and happiness. We don't attach that value to life. We don't have that much value we give to life. That's why we see a lot of times, you know, we are looking down, depressed. Why is that? Because we don't. Why are you unhappy for? This person, he said this about me. And what happens? So what if he said this? Why are you so worried about it? Why are you so worried about it? Has it affected your life? Has it changed your life? Has he hurt your life? No, he hasn't hurt my life. No, he hurt your feelings. But why are you letting it affect your life? Why are you letting it affect your life? I mean, life is such a low thing for you that when you look at life, anything that happens to you in life, you let it affect your life. My friends, it's because we don't attach value to life. If we start attaching value to life, then you will see that life, no matter what happens in life, you will breeze through life. And everything will be a source of pleasure for you in life, no matter what happens. And I'll explain more as we go into details, right, how this happens. But just to understand what life is itself is our main goal right now. That life itself is what we should understand. Because a lot of times, we don't find pleasure in life. Really, we don't. You know what we find like pleasure in? Are in the things that are related to in life. Right? We don't run after the pleasures of life. We run after the pleasures of other things in life. You know, we want the satisfaction of being secure. So the happiness is not because of life, it's because we want to find security in life. Right? We want to find, for example, fulfillment of desires in life. We try to do that. And all of these things you see, really, when you look at it, will truly be achieved not here. It won't be achieved here. Here is just an illusion for you. There it will become a reality. But because of the fact that we don't understand what life is, we are running after these things. We really run after these things. When we look at Imam Hussein, we see that in the height of pain, he found pleasure. The height of pain, yes, that. On one hand, the tragedy and the grief is there that, you know, this is happening to his family. On the other side, Allah is saying, nafse mutmainna, complete peace and pleasure. Imam Hussein is in. How did you find that, Imam Hussein? How did you do that? Why are you doing this? It's because I attach value to life. Life itself is beautiful. No matter what it gives you, no matter what you are in, life itself is beautiful. This is the idea Imam Hussein is trying to give us. So here, just one last thing I will mention, right? Raise this issue up, and inshallah, from there, you can reflect on it until the next time we meet and go further with the discussion. And that is, my friends, and this is where, you know, I want to give this idea out so we understand it. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. When we start life as a child, you see that we don't use the power of aql and intellect. We don't use the power of aql and intellect. Or comprehension. Before we even get to comprehension, the first faculty that we start using is imagination. What we call quwwatul wahmi, imagination. When you read stories to children, you see that they are based on imagination, not comprehension. Not trying to comprehend what's being said. You say, in a land far, far away, you know, where the birds used to talk, you know, and the animals used to, you know, speak. As an adult, you'd be like, what's that? You know, I don't understand it. As a child, your imagination can, imagine that. It can conceive that to be right. And when we grow as an adult, we curb our imagination. We restrict ourselves to only comprehension. We don't like to imagine things. In fact, we make fun of people who imagine things or dream about things, right? We make fun of them, right? This is, come on, you're imagining things. So we restrict that and we become restricted. Our minds become restricted. We become restricted in what we understand. Now you see, until I don't see the evidence, I don't want to understand it. I don't want to understand it. You see, my friends, this is a reason why people reject life. It's because they have stopped their faculty of imagination and they only now want to comprehend things. When we mentioned Jannat, they say, come on, this is a figment of your imagination. Until I don't see the proof and evidence of it, I can't believe in it. You see? We stop that. We stop ourselves. In Islam, we are told what to teach our children. You know, in fact, what we teach our children is completely wrong in our Sunday schools. What do we teach our children? Understand the Tawheed of Allah. Allah is this, this and that. These are the rules. These are the asma. And we are like, sticking it. Which is, not the right way of teaching it. You know how Ahlul Bayt have taught us to teach our children, even when they're toddlers. Even when they're toddlers, they say, you know, it is mustahab. We have in the hadith what to teach our children when they're young. They say when they're toddlers, 3 years old, teach them la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah al-ali al-azim. Teach them this dhikr. What is that? La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. There is no power There's no help except from Allah. And when you imagine Allah's power, it is infinite. It is unlimited. And then you say, how can a child understand something that is infinite? Something that is unlimited? No, a child understands it much better than an adult because he's using his imagination. You're not. He can fathom the idea of having Allah having infinite power. An adult cannot, because he is just using his aql and saying, oh, I need proof of that. The imagination goes much further than comprehension. Imagination goes much further than comprehension. If you want to understand, that's why people reject life. They only restrict themselves to dunya. This is life, because we see it, we feel it, we are here. We don't want to understand there. Why? Because we haven't seen it. Because you want to comprehend it, you don't understand it. You don't understand it, you reject it. But if you use your imagination, then you can reach that far. You can reach that far. That's why when you use imagination, and this is a faculty that we have, just like aql and intellect is a faculty. But we curb it because we restrict ourselves. Because society restricts us. Well, imagination is for kids, you know, and comprehension is for adults. It restricts us, my friends. This is the reason why we see. And why does that happen? Maybe it happens because, you know, comprehension is not for children, only imagination is. So they think imagination is only for children, not for adults. This is what they end up trying to think. But it's wrong. And let me just explain where that goes bad. It goes bad because we don't understand life. We reject life and we don't want to know it. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. This is the reason. Now, because of this, when we restrict ourselves to dunya and hayat to dunya, what happens? Our goals automatically become very, very small. Very small. What is your goal in life? I want to have a good retirement. That's it? That's your goal in life? I want to have a comfortable retirement. So your whole life you work in order that in old age you don't have to work? What kind of goal is that? That is such a tiny goal. And those are such tiny people. Such incompetent people. Right? Why? Why can't you have a bigger goal than that? Because that's all they understood of life. Let me give you some bad news first. Right? I'll give you the bad news and then inshallah I'll give you the good news. Right? You want to hear the bad news? Let me give you the bad news. Send the loud salawats. Really, there's something wrong when the only time we remember our life, our real life, is when we come to the center and listen to a speech. More than I saying it, so now I'm thinking about it. Otherwise, when we go away, that's it. It shuts down, it's finished, it's over. And we're not even thinking about it. That is a bad situation we're in. That's a really bad situation a person is in, my friends. Really. Imagine yourself like that, right? Let me give you that bad news. Would it be bad if the messenger of Allah turned his back on us? I mean, how would you feel that when you go on the day of judgment or when you go in front of Rasulullah and he turns his back on you? In other words, he rejects you. He doesn't want to meet you. How would that feel? How would you feel if Rasulullah turned his back on you? You went to shake his hand and he turned his back. He says, I don't want to deal with you. How would that make us feel? That would be bad, right? Bad. Well, let me tell you. He said that, you know, I'm going to turn my back on certain people. He says, فَأَرِذْ أَمَّنْ تَوَلَّى عَنْ ذِكْرِنَا. This one group of people, he says that, turn your back on those people who have turned their back on our dhikr and remembrance. If someone doesn't remember us, the Ahlul Bayt, turn your back towards them. Turn your back towards them. Right? Don't deal with them. Right? And now the second one, وَلَمْ يَرِدْ إِلَّا الْحَيَاةَ الدُّنْيَا. And the second group of people, and who are these people who turn their backs on Ahlul Bayt? He's describing them. These are the people who do not want anything but the life of dunya. Meaning that their whole and sole goal in life is dunya, hayatul dunya, that's it. If you see someone whose goals is dunya, that this is it, my life in dunya, that's all the goals I have, then it means that he has forgotten us. He doesn't know us. Turn your backs on him. And then he says, وَذَلِكَ مَبْلَغُ مِنَ الْعِلْمِ. He says, that's all they got from knowledge. I mean, from our knowledge, if our knowledge, if knowing Ahlul Bayt, if the things that we have thought, if the treasures that we have left for them, if this is all they have learned from us, then turn your back towards them. If this is all they have learned, that only dunya is my goal, then turn your back because we have turned our backs on them. Finished. That's all they got from our knowledge. Dunya, I mean, is that what we taught you? Is that the best you learned from us? That's it? Friends, anyone for who when they look at life, they are only looking at this dunya, then it means that they are away from Ahlul Bayt in such a way that Rasulullah will turn his back on them. This is not, he's talking about Shias here. He's not talking about others. Others, you still deal with them. But if you see someone who claims to be our Shia and says that I'm with them, and the only thing he learned from Ahlul Bayt is to run after dunya, that really, of all the things we thought, that's what you learned from us? You see, my friends, this is someone. That's why our life, understanding of life should be that life here is little, there is lot, but that is the real life. Right? That is the real life. This is the bad news. That's it. Inshallah, we don't end up like that. Let's make a dua right now together and say, Allah, we want our goals in life to be the goals that Ahlul Bayt have of life. This is the dua that we should make, right? This is the dua we should make. That our understanding of life should be of the real life. I want my life to be the real life, not just this, that life. All of it. Show the relationship what happens. But just right now to end this, as I said, I'll give you some good news. So that, inshallah, it will raise some hope in us. Right? Raise some hope in us. My friends, when you look at this life, I told you it's restricted. And when you look at yourself, and you look at yourself in the mirror, do you like yourself? Do you wish you can be something else? Do you wish that your situation can be different? In many ways, you know what, for example, I am stuck in this place, stuck in this society, look at this horrible circumstances I'm living in, I am poor, I am, short, I want to be taller, you know, I am bald, I want more hair. You know, my nose is too big, my nose is too small, my eyes are squinted, my ears are too big. When you look at yourself, just picture yourself. What is it that you want? Do you wish to change yourself? Do you wish to tell Allah that Allah, you know what, I want to be more, you know, this way. I want to have bigger biceps, broader shoulders. You know, I want to be, you know, 6 inches taller, maybe a foot, maybe 2 foot, you know, taller than what I am. What is it that, you know, like when you look, really look at yourself, have you ever looked at yourself and wanted something different? Wanted to be something different? Have you told Allah that, Allah, maybe if I was this way, I could do this? And Allah doesn't mind this sort of complaints. Allah doesn't mind at all if you raise these issues with Him. Allah doesn't mind if you wish to be something different than what you are. And Allah Himself is saying that you don't like yourself the way I made it? Are you saying you don't like yourself the way I made you? Obviously you made me this and that, but still I wish. Okay, that's fine. You know what? I didn't make you like this. Understand this, my friend, understand this. I didn't make you like this. All right, you want to be something different than what you are? I understand that here you can't change. You will have the same features, right? You will have, you know, the same height. You will have the same background. You'll have the same things. You can't change that here. But I'll give you a good news. The good news is that you won't have this for long. You won't be in this situation for long. Don't you see? I just put you here temporarily. And I put you here in a way that you are, you know, something that you might want to be different. You want might be better. You want might be this. Whatever you wish for, it is right for you to wish like that. Because I have restricted you by making you into a shape myself. And if you think that you can do better, and I want you to, if you think you can do better, let me give you the sketch pad. Let me give you the pen. Go ahead. Make yourself the way you want to be. Because you know what? When you go to your eternal life, you will go in the shape that you wrote for yourself, not the way I have forced you. I'm giving you the choice now. Go ahead. Make your choice. Make your choice what you want for yourself. How do you want to be? I'm giving you the choice. You have it. You are completely free to choose. And you will be the same way that you drew yourself. And that's my promise. You will be the same way that you drew what you wanted, I will give that. And that will be for an eternity. This is only for a few years, don't worry. You're stuck here for a few years, so don't be upset at what you are right now. Don't be upset at that. It's going to pass very fast. But I'm giving you the choice. See, my friends, this is where the hope comes in. This is where you have the choice. We have the choice. What Allah, this is what I want to be. I want to make myself this. I want to make myself do it. And I will make it for you. Subhanallah. What more hope do you want? What more encouragement do you want? And inspiration do we want than this? Make ourselves like that. You know? Now, how we draw ourselves, what we make ourselves is our own hands. People have made themselves. Some have made themselves look very ugly. And Allah had made them very handsome here. But they made themselves very ugly. They chose to do it. They wrote it themselves. Right? Look at Shimr. Right? Look at Umar ibn Sa'd. Right? They made themselves. They made their own picture for their akhirats. In this world, whatever they wear, they wear. It doesn't matter what you are here. Really doesn't matter what you are here, what background you belong to, you know, what's your race, what's your language, you know, all of these things, what's your gender, doesn't matter at all. What you make of yourself there is what matters. This is why utilize this. I mean, inshallah, I will explain this in detail the next time we meet. Right? But when you look at it, those who did paint themselves and did make themselves right, you see how they made themselves. Learn from them how to make yourself look good. How to make yourself look good? You know, John was a slave of Imam Hussein. You know, he came to Imam Hussein when people had gone, companions have gone and became shaheed, and he wanted to defend Imam Hussein. But he regarded himself, see, he regarded himself as someone who was unworthy. He regarded himself as someone who was unworthy. So when he went to Imam Hussein, he didn't have the audacity to just ask him, let me go out. Because he thought that those who went out are much greater than me. I don't want to spoil their name by being amongst them. Imam Hussein asked him, what do you want, John? What do you want? He said, Mawla, I don't know how to ask you this. In fact, I'm feeling ashamed. He says, that I am want to go there, and I want to be amongst those. But if you allow me, Imam Hussein said that, John, you have always been loyal to me. This is not your fight. I don't want you to hurt yourself and to kill yourself over the fact that they have their animosity towards me. Go. I mean, John, you don't have to do this. And I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to harm yourself. I'm telling you, really, I'm telling you. I don't want you to harm yourself. John, looking at the situation that Imam Hussein was in, where now he has no helpers. You know, Abbas is gone. Everyone is gone. And he sees that the ladies are in the haram and they're crying. The children are, really thirsty, and they're crying, asking for help, asking for water. And looking at the situation, John really wants to go, and he wants to be a part. And he wants to go and defend the Imam, do something for the Imam. But when Imam Hussein said, no, John, this is not your fight, go away, John began to cry. John began to cry. Tears came out of his eyes. And said, Mawla, is the reason you're saying no because of the darkness of my color or the odor of my body or the lowness of my background? When John said this to Imam Hussein, Imam Hussein, I don't know what he felt. Mr. John, don't say this to Hussein. You know that Hussein doesn't believe in that. You know what he's going through his heart, John. But you said this to him. Now that Hussein, when he heard that from John, said, John, come close to me. John, come close to me. And he hugged John. And he said, go. Go and give your life in the way of Allah. Imam Hussein, John, you have to understand that he's very compassionate. He has a lot of love. You don't understand the love that Imam Hussein has. You know, there was another slave, someone else's slave who was amongst the companions of Imam Hussein. They had a servant. The servant, he loved Imam Hussein, but obviously he was a servant of the companion, one of the companions of Imam, not even close. Someone who was further away from Imam Hussein. He was a servant of him. That servant, he wanted to fight for Imam Hussein. And he went out to the battlefield with his master. And he went out there and he was also defending him. The master felt he was fighting in one of the corners of the battlefield. In one of the corners of the battlefield he was fighting. And he was looking at Hussein. As if to see, to make sure Hussein, there's nothing wrong with him, no one shall harm him. And then obviously he didn't want to make any noise, he didn't want to shout so that he would distract Imam Hussein from what he is doing. So So one time, as he was fighting, he was injured, and as he was injured, he fell from the horse. When he fell from the horse, he was dying. And in that dying moment, you know, everyone used to cry out to Hussein, and Hussein would come to their aid. He did not want to cry out for Hussein. He said, "Who am I? I'm a nobody. Why would Hussein come to me? I'm just a servant. I'm just a slave of someone. No, he doesn't care about me. All these great men who are here, these great people who are here with their faith, Imam Hussein wouldn't even pay me the attention of the day, time of day to come over here to visit me." He was just thinking like that. His eyes were closed. And he was just now, he has submitted to his fate that he's going to die any minute. And he just closed his eyes. And he was just crying for Imam Hussein, that Imam Hussein should be saved. He had this love for Imam Hussein. And all of a sudden, he felt a coolness on his face. He opened his eyes and he saw Imam Hussein's cheek on his cheek. He said, "Mawla, why did you come and bother to come to me? I'm a nobody." He said, "You call me and I should not come to you. How can you think I would do that?" John, when you're saying this, know that Imam Hussein is loving you. You don't understand how much he has love, how big a heart that he has. When John went to the battlefield, when he went and gave his life, Imam Hussein came to him, and he picked him up. And he then offered him himself to the angel of death. He said, "Allah, accept this." And he told the angel of death, "Take this to my mother. Take him to my mother and say that this is a special gift from me to her." This is a special gift from me to her. Imam Hussein has that much love, and you see how that love translated on the battlefield. How much it felt, it doesn't matter, my friends, how low you are, where your background is from. Allah is giving you the pen to write your own life. Allah is giving you that pen to write your own life. And there are many people we see after Karbala also, that when they chose to, they did write their own life. We see one person in Sham, when the court of Sham was established, you know when it was established? And the Ahle Haram and Zainab and everyone was brought in the court. And it was Muslim dignitaries who lined up there in benches. They lined up there to see the spectacle. And when they saw the Ahle Haram coming in, everyone was just jeering and talking to each other and laughing and ridiculing. In this situation, one person stood up and he said, "Yazid, disrespectful behavior is this?" He said, "What's the matter with you?" He said, "Listen, what kind of these are the daughters of your prophet. Why are you behaving like that? This is inhumane treatment. This is not even treatment you give to animals, and you're doing this to them." Now the person who stood up was a Christian. The one who stood up was an emissary of the Roman Empire. He stood up and said, "What kind of behavior is this? You know, have some respect for even just for your guests by bringing these people in like this. Don't you have any shame? Don't you have any shame in doing that?" And Yazid looked at him and he said, "Listen, you know, you are a foreign person here. If you say more, then I will have to put you with them." He says, "You know what? Now I understand what's happening. I would rather be with them than be with you." Then he said, "You know what? Now I understand. Last night, your prophet came in my dream. And he gave me good news that I'm going to come to him.
that I would become Muslim. I didn't understand it. But when I see what's going on right now, now I understood. He came there and he went to Imam Sajjad. He said, stretch your hands out. He put his hands on his and said, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. Let me bear witness to Islam. Now I'm a Muslim. Now I can die any way I want. When Yazid saw this, he said, go ahead, punish him. He should be beheaded. He says, then I will be beheaded for that and I will be fine with it. Now you see that person was taken and he was beheaded. Imam Sajjad, he looked at him, but that person at least stood up when he saw Zainab ibn Umm Kulsum come inside. But all those people of Kufa, those people of Kufa who saw Imam Ali rule over them and Zainab ibn Umm Kulsum live amongst them. When Zainab ibn Umm Kulsum came to Kufa and were dragged in the streets of Kufa, these same women who used to be learning under Zainab, they would laugh at her, they would throw stones at her, and Zainab would be taking those stones, and the ladies will be hiding themselves in order to protect Zainab from being seen by these people.
أيامٌ خلبٌ ينقلبون يا محمود بحق محمد يا علاء بحق علي يا فاطر السماوات يا محسن بحق حسن يا قديم الحسن بحق حسن. Allah give us the tawfiq to be on the right path. Give us the wisdom to understand your guidance. Hasten the reappearance of our Imam. Make us his helper when he comes. وآخر الدعوان الحمد لله رب العالمين. ماتم حسين.